My guest today is Keith Elder. Keith, how you doing?
Hey, Dave. Great. Thanks.
It's good to have you on my show again.
Yes, sir.
It's been like 5 years since you've been on my show.
It's been a while. Yeah.
Welcome to that conference. I know you're speaking here today on, or was it yesterday?
Yesterday. Yeah.
Yesterday. On what? What were we speaking on?
My talk was on why Erlang. That was the title of it.
I have a question for you. Why Erlang?
So real simple.
Actually, what Erlang? What is Erlang first?
Erlang is a functional, cross-platform, battle-hardened, dynamic language.
Okay.
It was written originally at Ericsson Labs by three gentlemen.
Ericsson, the phone company.
Mm-hmm. Ericsson, the phone company. I think they started it in 1986. They open sourced it in 1998. That's when it was officially open sourced. It's actually, when you read it or do some research on it, you'll see two words. You'll see Erlang / OTP. Hmm. And the OTP stands for Open Telephone Platform.
Ah, I see.
Because it grew out of a telephone company, right. Obviously. But it's very confusing. The marketing's not really good on it. But that is, for those out there that are like .NET developers, for example, Erlang is to OTP as C# is to .NET.
Okay.
So .NET is a framework. C# is a language. Erlang is a language. OTP is the framework.
Okay.
And it comes with other tools and other things, just like the .NET framework comes with, you know, some executables, compilers, and all that stuff. OTP also comes with like a distributed database out of the box. One's called Nesia, spelled MNESIA. So like amnesia, but just take off the M.
Okay.
And so it ships with a lot of other stuff as part of the platform with it.
Okay. Interesting. So so why Erlang? What's the you were using it at your company, right?
Yeah. So
what was a compelling reason even to look at it?
Yeah. So I work for Quicken Loans, the number one mortgage lender in the country. Mm-hmm. And, number one online lender in the country. We're number two overall.
All right. It's a good company.
Yeah. So we're based out of Detroit. And,
it's a great city.
Yeah. It's good times. And so we started looking at it because we needed a way to scale certain things and go faster. And I can't go into details into what it is that we're specifically using it on because it's, you know, it's secret sauce kind of stuff.
All right.
But just imagine if you had a system that was highly clusterable, highly distributable, and can handle a large amount of concurrency,
mm-hmm.
okay? And we can talk about that if you want. Then that's kind of where we're using it for some sweet spots. You know, I'm a .NET guy. I've been a .NET guy for a while, and we just started hitting walls of we couldn't go fast enough. We couldn't go faster.
Is that because of the concurrency? Because you wouldn't have it.
It's for a little bit of everything, you know. Just a lot of different reasons. Because you get into a complexity, what I call queued services architectures,
yep.
to where, you know, you've done the services-oriented thing, to where you made things services. But then on the back end of those services, you're going to have a lot of queues and PubSub and yep. ESBs in the back end of that. That's all great, but then you have all these dependencies and all of these things, and it's really complex to deploy. It's complex to maintain. It's complex mm-hmm. to monitor.
Yep.
And what we found in our research and playing with Erlang is we can kind of replace that whole stack with Erlang, even all the way down to the database in some instances. So database, it's all part of the system, queues, all that stuff.
Does Erlang
everything.
Provide some kind of data persistence?
Yeah, I mean, you can use LevelDB, you can use Nesia, you can talk to anything out there. You can put stuff in SQL Server if you want.
Okay, so that's
but then you have
database.
A dependency on SQL Server, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're at the speed of SQL Server, which SQL Server can go this way, but it can't go this way. And so Erlang is about scaling this way,
so
right? It's about being more distributable, scaling
more
out.
More
right?
nodes or more servers.
Yes, let's just do a couple of use cases I did in my talk. So
yes,
WhatsApp was purchased by Facebook, okay, for I think $19 billion is what, you know, what's been promoted out there. Whenever
Facebook has a lot of money.
Yeah, they have a lot of money. But when they purchase WhatsApp, which is an app on your phone, you can send messages over the data connection instead of over SMS, right?
Okay.
Back in September 23rd, I think, 2011, they posted a blog article where they had 1 million connections to one server, to an Erlang server. So think about all the mobile apps out there. They're connecting to this one server. That's your concurrency, right?
Okay.
The reason that's possible is because when you spin up a thread in .NET, you're essentially allocating 1 megabyte of memory.
Okay.
When you do that in Erlang as a process, which is not an OS process because Erlang runs in a VM, you're essentially taking up 1 kilobyte of memory.
Hmm.
Okay. So that was September 23rd, January 11th. I think it was January 6th, 2012. They then had 2.2 million connections to one server.
Hmm.
And the crazy thing is that whenever they showed the actual CPU, they were only at 37.9% CPU.
Interesting.
So it's not something that they went to. They were able to sustain that. I think their numbers, they said they were able to get to, looking at some of their articles out there, and please correct me if I'm wrong, or don't yell at me if I'm wrong. But it's around 2.8 million connections a server. Now that's just crazy, right?
Yeah, and that's because the framework itself is taking up less overhead.
Yeah, so you're able to open up a socket connection. A socket connection is basically a process. You kick off a process. They're very lightweight.
Right.
And so Erlang's built for failure. It's built for high distribution of things. One of the demos I showed at the end of my talk was where I split my screen into four using TMUX, which is a thing on the Mac you can use for your terminal to kind of split it up.
Okay.
And so I had four shell prompts. And three of them, I started up three Erlang VMs, and then I clustered them together. And then I compiled an app that was chattering. So it was just sitting there, you know, spitting out something every 2 seconds in each of the windows. Then I updated it dynamically and then redeployed it to all of the things in the cluster.
Hmm.
But the processes that were running kept the same number in the loop. So every time it would loop, it would go 1, 2, 3, 4. And even though I deployed new code, it still kept the same number.
Interesting.
So the processes didn't actually have to be restarted. So if you've ever done .NET before, if you touch the app config file, the web config file, what happens? It's got to recycle the app pool. Everything is going to be taken down and restarted, right?
Yeah, I know that's a pain, but actually that does flush the cache. So
it does.
I do like that part of it.
Yeah, in some cases. But that's a case to where, so if you want to have those what's called nine nines, you want nine nines of uptime. Erlang is really touted for that in a lot of spaces.
And you said, it's designed for errors.
That's
another way of
we just let things fail in Erlang. Sorry.
Yeah, so you let them fail. That's an interesting paradigm here. That you're not trying to prevent failure. You're trying to handle the failures.
So we know things are going to fail, and so you know. So one of the case studies Motorola did with Erlang was interesting. Was they wrote some C++. With some C calls, and then they wrote some Erlang calling C. Then they wrote it all in pure Erlang. And some of the numbers that they realized, this is some of the early research we did that we found, you know, early on, was 75% less code. So a percentage of their code was defensive programming. It was around 20-something percent was defensive, like try, catch, is this parameter null or not, those kind of things, right? And we have to do it in C# all the time.
Absolutely.
It's the same thing.
It's good practice.
And so I showed a screenshot in my slide deck where there was, you know, this large C++ block, and then there was one line of Erlang, right? So you sort of go, okay, well, is that really truthful or not? So we started digging in, and, yeah, it's absolutely truthful. It's a lot less code because the platform itself, Erlang, the language, but OTP, the platform, just provides so much communication out of the box.
Okay.
You don't have to worry with all of the defensive programming. You just let things fail. And
what
then
happens,
there's
what
some,
happens by default when things fail?
Well, when they fail, there's these things called supervisors that are in Erlang. We'll get too much of the technical things, but there's things called supervisors. You can kind of just think of it as it's kind of like a manager. He's just watching for people not showing up to work today or whatever, right?
Okay.
Or your team lead, and so he's watching to see what's happening, and so he'll just, okay, well, you failed as a process. I'm just going to restart you.
All right. That slacker over there.
Right. That slacker, I'm just going to just kick you in the pants.
I like
and
this
make
metaphor
you,
a lot.
Right. So it's kind of things like that, because things are going to fail. But if you think about, you know, in the telecom world where Erlang was born out of, I mean, how many times have you sent a text message at 3 a.m. and it didn't go through? Like, they always work, you know. Whenever you're on the phone and you need to be able to automatically push new software from the back end of a telecom, you don't want to disconnect everybody.
Right.
And all of our software today typically has that, especially cloud, right? So when we get into the cloud area of things, if you have, you know, customers on your websites and, you know, those things, we have bankers. I don't want to have to tell bankers, hey, I need you guys to stop that application and restart it, right?
Yeah.
We're able to do these hot dynamic updates because Erlang is a dynamic language, but it's also compiled.
Mm-hmm.
So you get good performance, but it's also a dynamic language. So just a lot of interesting things. So we started looking at it and said, you know, this is one of those crazy kind of things that we could probably use in these specific ways, right? So I want to be clear that it's not a case to where Keith is saying Erlang all the things. I'm not saying that because the last time I checked, if you're going to write a Windows phone app, you still need C# or something like that and XAML and all of those things. None of that's going away.
There were a few key things that you were looking for
exactly
that the trigger? The people that are watching at home, they're thinking they're renting one platform. What kind of factors should trigger them to start thinking maybe Erlang is where I should be on?
Sure. So anybody out there that is looking for high concurrency, having a lot of connections to stuff out there, distribution, like having clusters and having things do that. Now, we don't do clusters with, you know, with like .NET, for example. We have load balancers and it round robins. I'm talking about active clusters that are aware of each other, peer-to-peer. So when you know when a machine joins a cluster, when it goes out, can share that. So any type of stuff that you need, high throughput, high concurrency, a lot of connections, that could be a lot of things. It doesn't have to be just, you know, chat applications or things like that. To give you some ideas, you know, any type of infrastructural things, or you want to send a bunch of logs to a particular system, right? That would be a great way to do. In our case, we have 12,000 desktops. Maybe we want a connection, all 12,000 back to a cluster so we can push things back to the clients for certain reasons. We don't do that today, but those are just some ideas that some people could go with.
All right, scalability, concurrency, lots of connections simultaneously. Yep. That seems to be the key.
That's a sweet spot for it.
All right. Keith, thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks, Dave. So happy to be at that conference. I have a lot of friends in technology, and they're all here, or at least the majority of them are here. We're missing a couple, but thanks, Dave, again for having me here on the show. Appreciate it.